A man born in chains would bring the world's most powerful empire to its knees. Toussaint Louverture's story sounds impossible. A self-taught former slave orchestrating the only successful slave revolution in history, defeating Spanish, British, and French armies while building a functioning republic. Yet it happened, and it terrified every slaveholding society on Earth. When Napoleon Bonaparte, fresh from conquering Europe, sent 40,000 soldiers to crush this rebellion, he underestimated what happens when people who have tasted freedom refuse to let it go. Toussaint's revolution didn't just free slaves, it shattered the foundational myth that justified centuries of brutality, that Black people were inherently inferior and incapable of self-governance. This wasn't just a local uprising, it was an earthquake that cracked the edifice of Atlantic slavery itself. What made Toussaint different wasn't just his military genius, it was that he possessed what he called the soul of freedom, even before the revolution began. Born into slavery on a Saint-Domingue plantation, he somehow cultivated an inner independence that would define his entire political life. He learned to read and write, studied military strategy and philosophy, and worked as a healer, witnessing firsthand the brutality of the plantation system while developing a deep aversion to unnecessary violence. His physical habits bordered on superhuman: constant movement, minimal sleep, pushing his body to extremes. Despite slavery's horrors, he never embraced a racialized view of humanity. Encounters with compassionate Jesuit missionaries and his boss, Bayon de Libertà, convinced him that goodness transcended race. This wasn't naive optimism, it was strategic philosophy. He built power through networks crossing every boundary: family connections, Catholic parishes, Vodou communities, fellow freedmen, and sympathetic whites. By the late 1780s, he attended secret Sunday meetings with future revolutionary leaders, laying groundwork for the 1791 explosion. Most startling, one slave he supervised was the young Jean-Jacques Dessalines, Haiti's future first emperor. Toussaint's revolution didn't emerge from rage alone. It was meticulously prepared by a man who understood that liberation required both spiritual conviction and political organization. His army absorbed revolutionary values with stunning enthusiasm, developing a military culture built on honor, solidarity, and mutual sacrifice. When Brigadier Berfey fell in battle, his men swore vengeance and fought with fury. This army's strength lay in its diversity. European soldiers, regular troops, and local militias united as true Republicans. But their republicanism had distinctly Caribbean character. When Sergeant Gabriel scaled a pole under fire to tear down the British flag, he destroyed this infamous banner of tyranny that threatened re-enslavement. Toussaint told his troops he was like a bird of prey who could find no rest while the freedom of his brothers remained threatened. His army maintained strict ethics: no pillaging, humane treatment of prisoners, protection of civilians. One story captured this spirit. A wounded British soldier, abandoned after battle, was found by a cultivator who tended his wounds, fed him, and escorted him to Republican lines. Toussaint beamed with pride, declaring it proof that Saint-Domingue's people, even though they have only just begun their journey towards regeneration, already understood Republican virtues. Toussaint faced a daunting challenge: convincing generations of enslaved people they were equal citizens while battling racist propaganda claiming Black people lacked moral capacity. Drawing on Rousseau, he argued that while Saint-Domingue's Black population lacked formal education, their proximity to nature gave them powerful intuitions about goodness and justice. The real monsters weren't supposedly savage Black communities, but the civilized men who profited from slavery. When critics accused Black people of selling their own children, Toussaint noted such horrors only occurred in British territories, and Europeans created the system. His most radical argument redefined Frenchness itself. Patriotism wasn't about race, it was about political will and commitment to the Constitution. Black citizens cherished their Frenchness because it symbolized freedom. By this logic, the 1791 slave revolt wasn't a crime. It was a founding act of Republican Saint-Domingue, morally equivalent to storming the Bastille. Yet Toussaint's vision demanded much. His people had to transcend internal divisions, forgive former oppressors, and prove themselves through collective example. Toussaint faced a brutal dilemma: rebuild Saint-Domingue's economy without recreating slavery. He restored plantations rather than redistributing land, reasoning the colony needed export revenue. He leased seized estates to officials and military leaders. Dessalines alone controlled 30 sugar plantations, yielding 100,000 francs each annually. His October 1800 decree imposed martial law on agriculture. Workers couldn't leave without permission. Vagrancy became criminal. Fugitives faced desertion charges. Dessalines enforced this brutally. Though whips were banned, clubs called cocomocs replaced them. For black workers entitled to one quarter of harvests, this felt disturbingly like slavery. They deserted in mass. Some districts had more runaways by 1800 than before 1791. Economically, it worked. By late 1801, sugar and coffee production reached a third of pre-revolutionary levels, cotton nearly 60%. But politically, the damage was catastrophic. Toussaint's agrarian policies bred deep resentment that would haunt his final months. In February 1801, Toussaint drafted a constitution establishing Catholicism as the official religion, banning divorce, and granting himself near absolute authority as governor for life, with power to name his successor. He knew Paris was considering a replacement governor. The constitution merely formalized Saint-Domingue's existing reality. It had overwhelming support. White colonists praised Toussaint as their protector. Black citizens expressed even stronger confidence, with municipalities declaring, "We do not need any other agent. We have confidence only in the commander-in-chief." The July 7th ceremony was pure political theater. Citizens were awakened at 3 a.m. by cavalry drummers. In a stunning power play, Assembly President Borghella announced that due to imminent peril, Toussaint must implement the Constitution immediately rather than waiting for French approval. The crowd roared its approval. Toussaint had effectively declared independence without using the word, asserting Saint-Domingue's right to self-governance while nominally remaining French. Bonaparte couldn't tolerate this audacity. In late 1801, peace with Britain freed French forces for a Caribbean expedition. By January 1802, Toussaint watched from Cape Samana as at least 25 warships appeared, 10 massive vessels carrying 1,000 men each, with dozens more following. "We must perish," he told his officers. "All of France has come to Saint-Domingue." The 72-day campaign became his greatest stand. Reduced to 6,000 men, he combined conventional warfare with guerrilla tactics, constantly mobile, sleeping only hours nightly. After burning Gonaives, he retreated to mountain hideouts, launching merciless ambushes. He prophesied the invaders' fate. "Those who will be spared by our sword will receive death at the hands of our vengeful climate." Yellow fever proved him right. By late March, Toussaint began exploring a truce, a tactical move consistent with his lifelong strategy. Then came the trap. On June 7th, French General Brunet invited him to a meeting. Despite warnings, Toussaint attended with minimal escort. He was immediately arrested, separated from his family, and shipped to France. Toussaint died in a freezing Jura Mountain prison in April 1803, but his revolution survived. Within months, Dessalines defeated the French and declared Haiti's independence on January 1, 1804. Walk through West Belfast today and you'll find a mural depicting Toussaint alongside Mandela, King, and Marley. In Washington's National Museum of African American History, his effigy stands near Jefferson and a pile of bricks representing Jefferson's slaves. From Santiago de Cuba to Port-au-Prince, monuments celebrate the man Frederick Douglass called proof that enslaved people could conquer freedom as a right. After World War II, his legend soared. Paul Robeson compared Ho Chi Minh to the Toussaint of Vietnam. South African freedom fighters claimed him as inspiration. But Toussaint's relevance transcends commemoration. In our age of resurgent nationalism and identity politics, his life offers a different path, one built on human dignity regardless of race, steadfastness against impossible odds, and the audacity to imagine a radically different world. He proved that today's injustices aren't inevitable, but historical choices that can be unmade. His revolution terrified empires because it demonstrated an uncomfortable truth. People in chains, once they taste freedom, become unstoppable. Toussaint didn't just free slaves, he freed an idea. And ideas, unlike men, cannot be imprisoned or killed. They spread, evolve, inspire. So here's the challenge Toussaint leaves us. What chains, visible or invisible, are we accepting as inevitable? What freedom are we too afraid to claim?